Chapter 8. The Northern Front. The rushing wind across her ears was the only sound Juliana heard for hours at a stretch. True quiet was beginning to sound eerie, as if there was some aspect of the world that was missing. The deck of the starlit Marauder was growing comfortable beneath her feet. Attuned as she was to the sound of the wind, she could easily detect a discordant note, footsteps on the stairs. "Stay below!" Juliana shouted. "If you need me, give a yell and I'll come down." The footsteps continued, heedless of her.
"I have come prepared," a voice called back to her.
She had known it would be him. His men were afraid of her. She turned to see the Safshan version of her friend Rikashi carrying a coil of rope, one end already looped around his waist. He crouched low as he made his way across the deck. Juliana tilted the starlit Marauder in a shallow banking maneuver, forcing Teba to scramble for a handhold. She glared back at him when he turned an angry look her way. It was the sternest look she could envision on him. Rikashi had always been hard to rile.
"You are still upset," Teba commented.
"They sure spent the long coin educating you now, didn't they?"
Juliana turned her attention back to flying, sparing glances enough to note that Teba was tethering himself to the railings.
"I ought to turn this thing upside down. Let him dangle a bit."
"Is all well up here?"
Teba asked. He was close enough that he was not shouting to be heard. Juliana refused to turn.
"Everything is fine. Go on back down."
"I cannot help but notice that we appear lost. We veer and circle too much to escape notice."
"Looking for Dinku Appa,"
Juliana muttered, daring Teba to hear her above the winds. She felt his hand take her by the chin. She jerked her head away, having hated the gesture since Rikashi had used it on her as a girl. It had taken her a year and more to break him of it, but he had gotten over his need to look her in the eye when talking to her. Teba seemed not to have learned.
"Look at me," he shouted.
Juliana turned, startled to hear him raise his voice for anything but to drown out the gale of the starlit Marauder's passing.
"What did you just say?"
"I was looking for Dinku Appa," she admitted. "That little island Brannis got stranded on. Seemed as good a place as any to leave you and your friends."
"Stop the ship. We go in pointless circles anyway. Come below and let us talk in peace."
She studied Teba's mismatched eyes. One was missing a patch that would have made the resemblance to Rikashi uncanny. There was no sign that he was willing to negotiate the point. Her eyes flicked briefly to the rune blade sheathed at his back. Teba's eyebrows raised and he turned his head as if to say, "Violence?" Juliana gritted her teeth, blinked and shook her head just slightly. The starlit Marauder came to a halt and drifted slowly in the breeze. The buckles and straps that kept her at the helm fell loose as she extracted herself. She shouldered her way past Teba on her way down to her quarters. She was sitting on the edge of her bunk when he arrived, coiling up the length of rope he had brought on deck. She noticed things about him that only Soria's eyes were accustomed to noting. He stood with his weight on his back foot, his left shoulder foremost to her. The coil of rope was held between them as he wound it back into neat loops.
"He's worried I might attack him,"
she sighed, forcing a smile onto her face. Teba's posture eased. He closed the door behind him as he entered and set the rope down on a chair. He took a spot beside her on the bed.
"Decisions can be hard things to make," Teba said. "The materials from which you build them can make them good or poor, no matter the skill that goes into crafting them."
"So this is where you try to convince me that you killed Iridan because you love me?" Juliana said.
She did not like the feeling in her eyes. Her vision was blurring and she blinked to clear it.
"So you think me jealous, then?" Teba said,
the hint of a chuckle in his voice. He was kind enough to refrain from actually laughing.
"To protect me, then? I admitted we fought, after all."
"You told me you had to hold yourself back from killing him," Teba said.
His tone was as mild as a grandmother's.
"What are you hurting me toward, Rikashi?" Juliana asked.
"You spend so much time with Brannis that you pick up his habits. Think less, reason more. Why did I kill your husband? I am Safshan, fighting alongside our Magrin Finns. He slaughtered our troops, our sorcerers. He cut down 3 of my brethren. Blade Priest, not just Safshan. I knew them like brothers, but it was not vengeance for them either.
Why then? Juliana asked.
Because I am a warrior. I met my foe on the battlefield and slew him. I was the better, the luckier, the one left alive. That is the way of war.
Why you? Why not someone else?
They tried and died. Success is the crime that draws your anger. Because I love you, I never told you it was me. It was a badly made decision, but built on love, Teba said. He put his arm around her. Juliana sat rigid, unrelenting for a moment in the face of his attempted reconciliation.
Not jealousy? She asked.
Teba pulled away from her, gesturing up and down the length of her with both hands.
Of this? What warrior babe might issue through those hips without cracking them like a wishbone? Where would a suckling babe find his milk? I have seen Soria in the bath pools, and doubt your magic enhancements will make you any milk. Get us on to Safshan, and I shall introduce my current mistress and show you what a mother looks like.
She stared after Teba as he rose with an amused smile on his face.
But I always thought...
Keep your brawness. Have skinny sorcerer children with him if you wish, but keep your thoughts out of my loins. I have always thought of you as a niece. It disturbs me that you think otherwise of me.
Teba closed the door behind him. The town of Nyrash was nearly deserted, save for a few soldiers who had been left behind to purchase time for the fleeing refugees. Their lives were the only coin the demon would accept. They looked fresh, unsullied, grim, and it was an experienced and knowing eye that did the judging. Rashan stood at the fore of 60 Kadrin infantry, freshly disgorged from the looming blade. It was Rashan's new favorite among the airships, the largest in the fleet, freshly ruined, and converted from a captured Azat freighter that had passed through the wrong waters and caught the warlock's notice. The ship was large enough to comfortably carry those soldiers, and many plundered luxuries. The defenders of Nyrash held the center of town as if there was some strategic value to the sturdy little courthouse, the civic hall, or the communal well. In truth, the library some streets over would have been their best defense. Rashan knew he was hard-pressed to wantonly destroy books. He guessed at their numbers, 50, perhaps 100, depending on how close their sources were huddled together, and how many were hidden beyond his vision.
Same as always, Captain, Rashan said over his shoulder. Wait for my command, then chase down whatever survives.
Pretty town you have,
Rashan shouted in Safshan as he began his slow walk to the Safshan defenders.
Will your wives and children be coming home tonight to weep over your bodies?
Of course, if I need to smoke rats from the holes they hide in, they might find that nothing remains of their homes but ash and rubble when they arrive.
Rashan did not know what to expect from his prey. The Safshan thus far had defied prediction. From city to city, they had laid traps for him, ambushed him, fled from him in terror. They had engaged in hit-and-retreat actions that suggested disciplined leadership, then stood stoically to be massacred with weapons in hand. A few singular individuals had proven entertaining, though none had yet to pose a challenge, let alone a threat. From the sources he saw, Nyrash would not provide the first.
Hold!
A voice boomed. Rashan's eyes snapped toward the sound. One of the stronger sources approached him, a weakling blade glowing in the ether at his back.
I would face you, demon, in single combat.
Ah, so you know me,
Rashan greeted the warrior. He was one of the blade priests the Safshan relied on for the core of their forces. He was not an impressive specimen of their kind.
Would you honor me with your name, sir? I am afraid the killing of nameless foes leaves little impression on my mind.
So many, you see.
I am Diabak of the Blade,
the Blade Priest identified himself. He drew his rune blade.
Say you understand and the town is spared, Diabak,
Rashan replied in winter-worn Takalish. He hoped it was good enough to be understood.
What manner of curse did you wish upon me, Cadran dog?
Diabok asked.
The curse of a shabby vocabulary of insults, it would seem, Roshan said. He drew Heaven's Cry, but let it dangle loose in his hand as he continued. Dogs are virtuous beasts. They take training well, are vigilant in their duties, and would die for their masters. Call me a craven murderer. I quite like that one. Or how about pestilent blood merchant? I think that is my favorite this past season. Though once boiled to its core, it makes little sense. It had style and vitriol, though, and that counts for a great deal.
Are you here to fight or talk, Roshan Soloran?
Diabok asked. Runeblade held forth.
Very well, my impatient seeker of... Bows strummed and arrows flocked to Roshan as if they were starved, and he the last morsel to be had. A dozen and more struck the warlock's shielding spell and bounced off, all aimed quite remarkably well toward his head. A handful struck to the skull, two piercing it. All others were struck easily away. Diabok took the momentary opening to launch his attack, sliding one hand down to meet the other near the hilt, and attacking Roshan while he was incapacitated.
Clang!
Heaven's Cry struck the blade aside. With his free hand, Roshan pried the arrows loose from his head and crushed the shafts in his fist.
Why do you not bleed? Diabok asked, eyes wider than before. What manner of creature are you?
You folk all call me demon, but did you understand what you say? Roshan parried twice more, the speed and strength behind his blade overpowering his mortal opponent's strikes and driving them wide.
Treachery, warlock. Brennus betrayed by...
Roshan frowned. It was a rather inconvenient place for the message to leave off. I am afraid I am called to more pressing business, Roshan apologized, giving a small bow. The next of Diabok's swings, Roshan did not attempt to avoid. He put out an arm and caught it on his shielding spell, reinforcing it just before impact. Heaven's Cry slammed into Diabok's side, finding the Blade Priest's defenses nearly as formidable. But Roshan had finished toying with his mouse. The force of the next blow drove the rune blade right back into Diabok, and Heaven's Cry passed through the Blade Priest's midsection.
Two blows. More than I would have wagered, Roshan spoke to the corpse.
Well done. Roshan gave Heaven's Cry a flick of his wrist to clean it, and then used the tip to slide the rune blade away from the entrails and spreading pool of blood.
Captain,
Roshan shouted back to his own men.
Have at.
Await my return before moving on. With that, Roshan rose above the Nairosh town square and disappeared in a sphere of ether. A crowd was beginning to gather about the shattered remains of the headquarters of the Cadran army. The debris, the dust, and the smoke from countless small fires kept them well back of the place, but by informal accord, a perimeter formed some distance back. That perimeter widened when a ball of ether arrived from nothingness to deposit Warlock Roshan between them and the destruction.
Oh my,
Roshan said, sweeping his gaze across the building. He strode off toward where Kyrus and Celia lay.
I say, he called out more loudly, I do hope you won.
I might call it a draw. The building lies in ruins, but so do I, it seems.
Kyrus swept a gesture to his surroundings, with one hand while the other held fast to Celia. She stirred in his embrace, twisting to face Roshan.
He saved me,
she told the warlock.
What befell? Roshan asked.
Skip the obvious for now. We shall lead up to that, I'm sure. Roshan skipped from one rock chunk to another, walls, floor, and ceiling all jumbled together, indistinguishable.
I was empowering my speaking stone,
Iris began.
I ran into some difficulties on the innermost layer of the rune structure.
It was sabotaged.
Celia spoke before Kyrus could elaborate, and he snapped his head down to look at her, surprised by her assessment.
What?
Kyrus asked.
Sabotaged how?
That flaw within the final rune? It trapped you into pouring too much ether into the crystal. Whoever did that must have wanted the device to explode, not simply fail. The damage was too well hidden. There was no way Brennus could have realized until it was too late.
You saw this? Rashaan asked her. He reached a point next to the recumbent pair and towered over Kyrus.
It became obvious.
I had no idea you were so adept with runes, Rashaan observed. Well, Kyrus began.
It was glowing like dawn fire, Celia said.
Rashaan looked to Kyrus, who was lying amid the rubble he had created and clothed in rags. He fixed Kyrus with a withering, pitying glare. So, fire hurler, you have botched this one quite well. What made you think the stone needed more ether when it was refusing all advancement? Did you think you would recarve the runes within as you went? It had always worked before, Kyrus replied. But he knew it to be a lame excuse, even as he offered it. He tried to shrug, but found his circumstances greatly inconvenienced by Celia lying atop him. How did you manage to survive the blast yourself? Celia warned me. I drew as much into my shielding spell as I could before the crystal shattered. See, Brennus, I told you shields worked well against hurtled fire. That essentially is what the blast was. Rashaan turned to the wary crowd. It was full of staring eyes and idle hands. Get to work. There will be a gold lion for each body pulled free. 10 for anyone brought out alive. Get to it.
I know who did it, Celia said. Or at least I can narrow it to 2.
What 2? Rashaan leaned closer, a viper's smile leering down at Celia. She did not flinch at his sudden closeness.
Dulvane or Caladris, she replied.
What? Kyrus and Rashaan exclaimed in unison.
Neither would have done the deed themselves, but they are the ones to whom all trails lead. Dulvane opposes you from across open plains of battle. Caladris opposes you from your own left hand.
You have evidence of this? Rashaan asked.
Of course. Brennus can act as witness.
Kyrus felt a chill as the blood drained from his face, as well as his brain, stomach, and extremities.
I am a dead man.
Thank you, Celia. If you were twinborn, I would have Brennus march over and strangle you myself. Kyrus managed to confuse himself even in his despairing thoughts. Brennus, you know of this? Rashaan's eyes narrowed, boring into him, searching for deception.
Undone by my own deeds. Better than getting caught lying for those two vipers.
Yes, he admitted. And what part did you play in this? The tone was neutral to Kyrus's ears, but he watched the warlock for signs of a sudden draw just in case. Heaven's cry was of token concern. Yours, Kyrus replied. They both sought my aid in overthrowing you, being of the opinion, rightly I must say, that you rule Kadrin rather than Emperor Somek. Indeed, Rashaan's eyebrows raised. A small grin accompanied it. Amusement or a trap? So long as neither side received my aid, neither would act. I had but to persist in hedging to get Dulvane to divulge more of his plan. Caladris was cagier. I was not even sure Celia knew of his crossways dealings, Kyrus finished.
That felt good. What was that Axterian said about truth always being best? Blasted old fool is wiser than all of them.
Highly enlightening. Brennus, I must thank you. I have put you under more burden than I realized, and you have managed admirably. For the time being, I feel I must restore some measure of sanity by personal artifice. I will hold a meeting in the inner sanctum in an hour's time, or whenever all the inner circle can be roused. I shall order the summons. Just clean yourselves and be present, both of you. Rashaan's rant had the rolling momentum of a seasoned politician, with no civil spot to break in for comment. Even as he finished, Rashaan bounded off for the palace before Kyrus could form a question.
This ought to be fun, Celia muttered.
She was close enough that Kyrus could feel her breath on his neck. Why did you sell Caladris's name along with Dulvane's? You have no traitors left to bargain with.
It was that or lose you once one of them used this as leverage to goad you into conflict with Rashaan. You're no good at this, Kyrus, much as you try to be. You've got more raw power than I can fathom. But at the same time, you're a menace because your little mistakes level buildings. Rashaan's afraid of you, you know. If you prove yourself too uncontrollable, he'll kill you. Not try, just kill you.
I somehow doubt.
No, he toys with armies. Don't finish that thought. Follow my lead and let Rashan take care of business how he sees fit. Become his true ally, and Kadrin will be safe and prosperous.
Why? It all seemed so convoluted.
Kyrus had kept up as best he could, but Celia was thrice a puzzle.
Because if I left things alone, I'd wind up married off to Caladris as a favor somewhere in the near future, Celia said.
Kyrus was about to contradict her, but she cut him off.
I know. Ruse within ruse. I fancy you well enough, Kyrus, but we both know you just bide your time with me. Rashan will be mine, and you can have your feral one, when she wanders home. You wouldn't...
Celia appeared to struggle for a word.
Settle for me.
Kyrus swallowed.
She knows. She figured it all.
Deal.
I may have only just been fitted for this crown, sirs, but I find that this is below my station. I am not to be summoned in the middle of the night to stand in the middle of this room of yours,
Somic said. He was standing between Celia and Kyrus, the only others not seated up in the row of inner circle sorcerers.
We pride you from between two whores, your highness. Your business hardly seemed pressing,
Rashan replied, drawing a chorus of chuckles. It broke a mood that had been understandably tense given the warlock's surprise return and urgent, dark hours meeting.
They were daughters of Halimir and Peloton,
Somic protested, drawing himself up to his most erect posture. The seats of the inner circle still towered well overhead, unimpressed.
Only the finest for you, your highness,
Rashan mocked.
Now if we can dispense with the pleasantries, I will cut to the meat of this meeting. I would like to discuss a sword.
Rashan slid Heaven's Cry from its sheath, cradling it across his upturned palms. He paused long enough for all eyes to fix upon it. As everyone watched, he took the sword by the hilt. With a sudden burst of motion, he skewered Dolvain Lorien through the heart, crackling through his weak shielding spell. A riot erupted as inner circle members made themselves as scarce as possible without leaving the chamber.
Sit!
Rashan snapped. He drew a dripping blade from Dolvain's body.
Caladris, would you say that justice was just done?
He asked.
Yes, Warlock Rashan,
Caladris answered with a shaking voice.
Excellent.
Rashan turned then to Caladris, but the duplicitous sorcerer was not caught unawares as Dolvain had been. A shielding spell stopped the first strike of Heaven's Cry. Before a second could follow, an arc of lightning issued forth from Caladris's fingertips. Rashan was thrown bodily across the chamber and staked to the wall by the force of the blast as a secondary arc snapped and spat along the stonework. Kyrus put himself in front of Celia and Somic, who cowered next to her.
So much for wards in this chamber preventing violence. Either they have been damaged, or they never existed.
Taking care for how strongly he drew with the Emperor so near, Kyrus reinforced his own shielding spell, putting a layer of ether between the combatants and where the Emperor and Celia took shelter. The maneuver stole much of the free ether from the room, and Caladris, who had already taxed himself to his limit, could no longer hold the demon at bay. Rashan ran him through. One by one, Rashan asked Celia's verdict on each of the inner circle. Only Aloysia and Fenris were spared.